studio by Alan Little, who spent much of the early 90s reporting for the BBC on the wars in the former Yugoslavia. Alan.
Eddie, let me take you back to the summer and autumn of 1992 when the war in Bosnia was already in full swing. We were camped on the edge of that war in central Bosnia, and at night you could watch the fires of ethnic cleansing across the landscape. The flames provided the only light under the night sky, and the black valley would glimmer with flecks of orange. And you could watch the men of the village we were in move about silently in the shadows of their homes, each one armed with some ancient weapon. One morning I watched a procession of men and women emerge from a forest. They'd been driven from their homes 2 days earlier by a Serb advance and had fled with what they could carry. Most of them were on foot, but some were crammed into the back of ancient farm vehicles drawn by donkeys. There were around 40,000 of them. It was huge and it looked like something from Tolstoy. Among them, one man seemed very close to collapse and he stopped to speak to us. I asked him how old he was. He said he was 80. I remember his pale, almost translucently white skin stretched across the bones of his face like parchment. And after he'd told us his story, I said, "May I ask, are you a Croat or a Muslim?" And the memory of what he said next echoes in my mind as I hear it down the years. "I am," he said, "a musician." Our convenient ethnic shorthand reduced them all to Serbs, Croats and Muslims, but they were also musicians and scientists and doctors and plumbers and farmers and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and very often children. The first time I met Mladic was in that first hot summer of the war in Bosnia. We were at Lukovica barracks on the southern edge of Sarajevo. The barracks was awash with weapons and the menacing strut of the paramilitaries. You could buy a Kalashnikov assault rifle for $200. You could buy a hand grenade for $1, the same price, I would soon learn, as the cost of a fresh egg in the besieged city. I simply bumped into him by chance. "Yes," he said, as he saw my incredulity. "It is I, Mladic." He had just come back from the city centre front line, and he was pumped up with the thrill of the battle. I shook his hand, and he held it fast. He held my hand for what seemed like many minutes, fixed me with his eye, and told me he was the great defender of brotherhood and unity in former Yugoslavia, and that he dreamed of a world in which there would be no guns and no war. He struck me then as fanatical, dangerously so. 2 days after I'd met the old man, the musician, on the refugee trail, I found myself drawn into the passions of the war in a personal and at the time devastating way. My cameraman, a man I had known and worked alongside for 18 months, was killed by a Serb gunner on a ridge above the road he was driving up. We had parted only 30 minutes earlier. He was 25 years old, a talented and ambitious young filmmaker from Zagreb. We broke our hearts at his funeral. The grief of it connected me to the sentiments of the war, the impulse to vengeance and counter-vengeance that were so much a feature of what we were witnessing. General Mladic did not pull the trigger, but his command created an atmosphere of wanton permissiveness which cost countless lives. It is a different Serbia that has put Mladic behind bars, one that's turning the page on the darkness of its recent past.